City. So I want to introduce now, I've got with me a couple of city advocates here for housing from an organization called More Neighbors Calgary. I've got Catherine Davies and Justin Similuk here. The city of Calgary is currently in a housing crisis. Rents have gone up, I think, close to 40% in the last four years. Housing, similarly, single detached housing has gone up. I think it's about one in five Calgarians can no longer afford the home that they are current living in. And we're seeing this all across the country. And the city of Calgary came out with a housing strategy to tackle the crisis that we currently face with 91, I believe, different recommendations. And one of them, including which is currently up for public hearing as we speak, we're, I think, on day three or day four right now, is the removal of exclusionary zoning. I think I was explaining it a little bit before, but I'm going to first introduce our guests. Good morning to Catherine and Justin from More Neighbors Calgary.
Morning.
Hey.
Hey.
Good to be here.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Thanks for pulling yourselves away from the live stream of the public hearing, or maybe those comfy theater seats in the council chambers. Let's maybe start off with a little bit of actually an introduction of More Neighbors Calgary. Can you tell me about, maybe Catherine, what More Neighbors Calgary is and how it started?
Sure. So we are a grassroots pro-housing organization. And you mentioned the Housing Affordability Task Force that was rejected by City Council last June. To widespread outrage. And in that moment, Willem Klumpenhauer, who is ostensibly the co-founder of the group, he and I had this conversation and we were like, oh, we need More Neighbors Calgary, because there's a very active group in Toronto called More Neighbors Toronto. And they've done great work in speaking up for housing. And so in the 24 hours between when Calgary City Council rejected the task force and then realized that they'd made a political miscalculation and voted to accept the task force, More Neighbors Calgary was formed. And when I say formed, we created a Twitter account and a Discord server, but that was the beginning of all of this. And there just seemed to be so much, pent up anger. Like, people were really angry about that. We have this housing crisis and here is council doing absolutely nothing about it. And all of a sudden people were paying attention to this. And so we decided it was time.
Justin, what brought you into the draw?
Similar. Like, I knew Catherine and I knew Willem from before, and the rejection of the Housing Affordability Task Force recommendations in June was pretty huge. And like Catherine said, it really manifested into this "what's going on" attitude, with something that seemed so simple that it was, you know, City Council asked administration to come up with these recommendations, and then they brought them and they're like, well, we don't like them, so we don't want to deal with them. And I think, you know, we're a city that's kind of in a crossroads right now of where we're growing, and I think we're gonna have to start kind of looking at different directions for how we do things. And I think More Neighbors and like these recommendations are going to help get us to where we need to go.
And it's kind of funny too, because the issue of housing has become sort of like a bipartisan, like, cross-spectrum issue, where at least at the federal level, there's almost complete unanimous support between, I think, all the parties for removing things like exclusionary zoning, for removing red tape, and allowing local governments to build more housing. And so it seemed kind of funny that local municipalities like Calgary might actually be split on this, at least the city council. So maybe now's a good time if one of you is able to maybe take a crack at explaining what exclusionary zoning is, because it's sort of been this policy that's been hanging around with us for half a century or so. It's really shaped the way Calgary looks today as a city, and how it's planned and laid out as a city. How would you, to the average person, I guess, who's not like a policy wonk, how would you explain exclusionary zoning?
I think like maybe the simplest way to explain it is like you can build one type of home in one area surrounded by more types of homes. It lets you say, like, for example, you can build a single detached home. That's the only thing you can build on that property. We're not going to allow other things to be built on that property unless you try to change to a different zone. And that's kind of where this removal of exclusionary zoning is coming from, is because we want to move to a zone that allows more types of housing to be built on a single plot of land. So a word that's getting thrown around a lot is blanket rezoning, because it's covering the entire city. But what I've been saying lately is I've been calling it quilt rezoning, because, you know, a quilt is a patchwork of different things that turns into a blanket and like helps encompass, and everything has to work together to make like this single source that, of things that we need. So, you know, when you look at this district that they want to move the zoning to, you know, you can build single detached houses, you can build duplexes, you can build row houses. It really opens up the menu for what we'd be able to build in the city.
And I want to, there's some, a lot of maybe misinformation and confusion circulating around there, that this is basically the build whatever, wherever rule. That's led, I think we've maybe seen in the public hearing, some people come forward, you know, very upset that someone could just build at a tower or an apartment building beside them. So if we're talking about these single detached housing communities that were built between the 50s and the early 2000s, that are just exclusively single detached, what would that mean for what could be built and what still could not be built in on those properties? Catherine?
Yeah, so that's been an interesting to hear over and over again, that it will be a bonanza for developers and just a free-for-all. In fact, our zoning will still remain, and it will still be very restrictive. So this is allowing the gentlest increase, the lowest incremental increase in density. And the C in RCG stands for contextual. So if you look at any RCG development and compare it to any, you know, single detached infill or semi-detached infill, it's, you know, rough, it's a slightly larger lot coverage, but only slightly. The heights are roughly the same. And it fits right into existing neighborhoods. And you can't, you know, it's just very, very small increase in what you can do. The big difference is that you can add more doors. You can add more units. You can make smaller units. But it's definitely not a free-for-all.
And not, let's clarify, actually, not apartment buildings, or yes, apartment buildings?
No, not apartment buildings. The G in RCG stands for ground oriented. So the doors have to open to the street. Also, no commercial is permitted. And I know that that annoys Justin.
You want a coffee shop right out your door, eh?
We all want that.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, you know, what happened to the corner store, hey? That, maybe we can bring you back for another episode on that. So I guess, what you would say the top reasons, given, you know, the context of being in a climate crisis and in a housing crisis right now, what are the top reasons why removing exclusionary zoning, allowing people to build row homes, townhomes, duplexes in previously single detached only properties, what are the reasons for doing this?
Well, you brought up the climate crisis, and kind of like, quite frankly, there's almost no solution to climate crisis that doesn't involve living more compact. You know, when you live in a more compact city, you know, you can have a more walkable neighborhood. You can get to more places by biking or public transit. It makes providing those services a lot easier to justify. So, you know, like if you need a bus route going to a neighborhood, it's a lot easier to try and justify that service when there's more people living in a service, right? So like that all kind of funnels down into affordability as well. Like you could possibly be paying a little bit more for a home, but then your quality of life and the things that you need in your life are readily available to you. So you might not need a car, which is also a huge expense on a lot of people.
And what about, you know, with respect to the housing crisis, what would be the best argument for that, or arguments?
So under the current zoning, you can only build really the most expensive type of house. In very few places in the city can you build anything other than a single detached home. And if you look at the range of prices on new build single detached home, they're just astronomical. Like, Justin, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the median price is something around $1.4 million.
Yeah, like when you're looking at replacing a inner city, you know, bungalow with a detached home, I think it's around $1.4-1.7 million.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of complaint about the affordability of row houses. So, like, yeah, the new build row houses, they're not cheap. I think some people are inflating the price a little bit. Like some of the ones in Altidore, for example, I think they've got gold plated toilets or something, and they are very expensive. They are luxury row houses. But a lot of the ones being built around me are actually quite modest. Like they're about as modest as you can build in a home. I mean, they're nice, they're fresh, but they're small and they're, you know, just kind of basic. And so they go for like $450,000 to $600,000, which is actually affordable for, you know, some middle class households. But I think what's really important is that when you tear down a bungalow and build a single detached, like McMansion, that costs $1.4 million, you are doing nothing for our housing supply. If you tear down a bungalow and put on four units of row house with basement suite, that's a net unit gain of 7. And then all of a sudden, there are 7 households occupying this property where only one existed before. And that is 7 fewer households that are competing for housing down the line. So, I mean, I could go on about this for a long time. And there are people in the city much smarter than me who can talk about all the reasons that this is important for housing affordability. But fundamentally, if we don't increase supply, like this is very basic economics, there's massive demand. We have to ramp up our supply to meet that. We cannot keep doing that by just building on the edge of the city. We can't just say we're going to build apartments along McLeod Trail and expect that to solve the problem. Not that we shouldn't be doing those things too, but there's no reason to not be doing this. And if we're taking a yes and approach to solving this housing crisis, we just have to move forward with this.
And
I just want to add,
go ahead, Justin.
Like, yep. Catherine kind of made a good point. Like this wasn't just cooked up in some backroom political, you know, secrecy thing. Like this was a recommendation put together by housing experts, by city administration experts, by development experts. Like a lot of people have gone into it and put thought in this. It isn't just some harebrained idea of like, well, let's just upzone the city and hope for the best, especially with the zone that we're switching to, this RCG zone, this residential contextual grade orientated, it's a zone that we've used in the past and that we know that it produces homes. So we shouldn't get into this bogged down thing of, well, we upzone the city and now houses aren't getting built, because we already know that we can get houses built with this zone.
And is it true or accurate that this zoning is actually being implemented in the new communities in Calgary for a number of years already?
Yeah, the new suburban communities are already zoned RG, which is for the suburban equivalent, right? So it's already used in our city and already kind of demanded in our new developments.
So I want to talk a little bit about the public hearing, which has been going on right now, because I think one of the arguments too that's kind of being twisted against rezoning and removing exclusionary zoning is that adding more supply doesn't necessarily mean adding below market housing. And so there's this sort of conflation between affordable housing and housing affordability, both of which are separate goals. I think there's 5 different goals under the housing strategy, and both of which are separate goals, of which have separate initiatives. And so can you elaborate on that maybe a little bit about the difference between market, like below market government subsidized housing and supply initiatives like removing exclusionary zoning, which increases supply, and how they are both beneficial?
Sure. Yeah. And no one is suggesting that we don't need serious investments in non-market housing. But, you know, it's been funny. You mentioned the weird political divides, or how this doesn't really hew to normal political the normal political spectrum. It's been funny to see terms tossed around in this hearing, like, Marxist Leninist dogma.
I saw neo-Marxism.
Neo-Marxism. I heard Marxist Leninist. There's been some talk about communism. And it's funny because the pro-housing people are advocating for more market housing. We're saying, let the market help, like stop constraining the market. And the people who are trying to constrain the market are, and who keep falling back on this trope of, oh, we don't need market housing. We, especially in my neighborhood, we just need non-market housing to be over there, like on the vacant land, industrial land. And I think there's a bit of irony there. So we desperately, desperately need government investment in non-market housing. Subsidized housing, we need, you know, there are so many people who are struggling. I can't emphasize enough that we want to see that, but I don't think that excuses the need to constrain market housing, because market housing can serve most people in Calgary if we just let it. I don't know if that answered your question. No. Justin, maybe you can jump in.
Yeah, like just kind of doubling down on what Catherine said, like we strongly believe that we need subsidized housing and non-market housing, but like there's still a market for market-based housing. So it's not going anywhere. And I think the same people who kind of really have been putting forward this, we need non-market housing and we need non-market housing, the people who have been really pressing that like in their neighborhoods or whatever, I kind of think they would probably be the same people who would be against it if it was near them. So
I want to play a clip from a public presenter last night, a grade 10 student who I think of this was like panel number 45, and each panel is about five people, so we're now a couple hundred people or more, 200 or 300 people into the whole public hearing, and how you can tune out and tune back in, and actually you think you've heard it all, and then you hear something new. And this one I thought was quite refreshing. It's really getting a lot of traction, and a lot of people are liking it online. I'm going to play this. It's about a minute or two, and then we'll come right back to you, and I'd like to get your thoughts.
We'll have to look for different zoning models and procedures. And I wanted to be here because my generation relies on what remains of these prairies to help avoid dangerous levels of climate change, and will require a city that is more resilient to the effects of any climate change and other challenges. I believe the proposed bylaw, through its contributions to Objective 1C of the Calgary Housing Strategy, will help address my concerns. I had carefully prepared my arguments to support this statement, but this is panel 45 and plenty of others have already brought these arguments in front of council today. So, instead, let me share a few observations on the hearings. I am not against a plebiscite in principle. After all, I was born in Switzerland, the country of direct democracy. But after listening to over 40 panels, I'm not sure that we citizens have a sufficient understanding of the proposal to make an informed choice. There's also too much repeating of tired tropes, logical fallacies, and scaremongering, all of which I would say are not a good basis for policymaking. Let's start with the tropes. I do not buy the argument that this proposal unfairly affects the rights of homeowners who see their homes as an investment. As with any investment, they would have considered their associated risks, which include the risk of change of any kind. Besides, is it the job of the government to protect their investments? I heard logical fallacies that would give my teachers a stomachache. Just one example. People argue that the plan is pointless, that new homes will not be affordable anyways, and rather priced at the luxury end of the spectrum. At the same time, they argue that this plan will bring higher rates of crime to their neighborhood. Why would that be then? The specter of crime-ridden neighborhoods, of course, is one of those scaremongering tactics. If density were the only or even a key driver of crime, why do places like Hong Kong or Tokyo have remarkably low rates of both violent and petty crime? There are also those who feel the democratic process is failing here. In my neighborhood, as I'm sure it was the case for most of you, we have received many invitations in a variety of form. We have been directed to ample information.
And the clip online cuts out there, but I think it was going on to talk about the city's engagement on the issue, which actually has come under a lot of, or has been at least held up as a argument to oppose the rezoning. Catherine, you've been keeping track of count of the for and against, and I think the number you shared with me earlier was a bit interesting because the early numbers we'd been hearing just from kind of online informal polling were actually quite weighted towards opposing this, and what you've seen has actually been somewhat different. Can you explain the numbers you've seen so far in the public hearing?
Yeah, so don't maybe quote me on these numbers, but I count 13 neutral, 94 in opposition, and 98 in support. And so I have weak Microsoft Excel skills right now. Those might not be quite correct, but they're pretty close. So even I am surprised at how many people have turned out in support of this. So I think if you look through the public submissions, and I did, I've scrolled through probably half of the attachments, they are overwhelmingly in opposition. But I did notice that there are a lot of duplicates in there. You know, a lot of the submissions read the same and they come from these like geographic clusters in Calgary. So it looks like, you know, one neighborhood might have really pushed a bunch of people to submit, for example. And so I think you kind of get this bias there. And I read through those and in my inexpert opinion, I really don't think that's reflective of the mood in Calgary right now. And I think it's also, it's been driven by a lot of misinformation or disinformation and misinterpretation of what this policy is actually about. And so I think, especially for people, I feel like there are people who were planning on speaking in opposition to this, and they might have started listening to this public hearing and thinking, oh, this is not what I was led to believe. Like what's happening here is not, I'm not going to show up and oppose this and make myself look like a fool. So we'll see how that continues to play out here.
As, speaking of which, we've seen, I think, maybe for the first time, some of the highest number ever kind of convoy clowns, if you will, coming out and ranting about anything but what's actually being considered right now, everything from the World Economic Forum, vaccines, Trudeau this and that, the UN, people kind of having confusion around, you know, the kind of the way at least our democracy works versus direct democracy, and sort of a misunderstanding of or seem to grapple with that because they have a different opinion than everyone else. Like everyone else should sort of just this assumption that they are the people because their Telegram channel online, you know, echoes what they are thinking. What is sort of the mood being in the chambers from what you've seen during those presentations? How is that falling?
From the convoy style presentations?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. So there have been people camped out in chambers and outside chambers from both sides of this debate. And especially earlier, like on Monday, there were a lot of people. The gallery was packed and they were cheering and they were clapping and they were heckling and very excited about anyone who was showing up to speak in opposition to that. But it's certainly died. I mean, obviously it's died. No one's going to sit there for 3 days except me. So yeah, the mood has definitely changed. There's still been a few people kicking around that just seem very excited to sit there and glare at council and try to manifest somehow that the recall is going to work or something. It's but yeah, it's been, to be honest, it's been pretty quiet in chambers lately, even during the
very, very interesting. Justin, you presented last night, and I want to ask you because specifically you seem to call out, you know, certain councillors as, you know, potentially performative actors. You know, one day they're screaming about the cost of housing and the cost of living in Calgary, and then the next day they're voting against it. Can you elaborate on this and why you kind of really leaned into it and your thinking around that?
I think there's a couple councillors who, you know, like usually what happens is we see the final vote, right? That's kind of what people pay attention to a lot of the time. Like when the housing strategy passed in September, was it 10 votes for or 12 votes for or something like that? But, you know, what we kind of miss from that is the people who are trying to amend these major parts out of it and trying to remove things like, you know, this upzoning stuff. So I think, you know, when they're in council and people aren't paying attention as much, they try to get away with some sneaky things. And then once it comes to their final say, they can kind of like play both sides and be like, well, hey, look, I voted for this thing. It's like, well, you actually really tried to kill it and now you haven't. So now you're just kind of trying to save face. So.
Hmm. Well, I could probably spend another hour talking to you guys about this, and there's so many different ways to go into it. But I guess I want to go out on this is a public hearing. It is still ongoing. Is it still possible for those who are interested in weighing in and having their voice heard? Is it still possible for them to participate in the public hearing? And if so, how do they do that?
It is, absolutely. And You should call in, or you should show up to city council. If you go to the More Neighbors website, moreneighborscalgary.ca/RCG, you can find some information there, including instructions on how to sign up to speak at city council. It's very easy and it's actually quite fun. So there have been quite a few of us down there at chambers supporting speakers. And yes, absolutely. You can sign up to the very end. And if you want to speak up for housing, you should do so.
Yep, you can sign up all the way until the last speaker finishes. And, you know, like this, and you can do that in the future too, because we're going to have more public hearings in the future. This doesn't get rid of public hearings like some councillors may have been saying. So continue to sign up and speak at council.
Well, thank you both for taking the time early this morning to chat with us about housing in Calgary.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Peter.
Once again, I've been joined by Catherine Davies and Justin Similac from More Neighbors Calgary. You can check them out at, I believe, moreneighborscalgary.ca or just Google them here. We're going to be joined by Drew Anderson from the Narwhal just after this. Keep it locked. You've been listening to CJSW 90.9 FM.